Today on the On.net show, we're learning about pipelines, which David and Pavel built. Come learn about it and make your app run faster. Hey, welcome to another episode of the On.net show. Today we're going to talk about system I/O pipelines. We've got David and Pavel here from the ASP.NET team.
Hey.
So, yeah, hey. What is this thing, pipelines?
Pipelines came out of us doing work for Tech Empower. So Tech Empower is the benchmarks for all the framework, for all the web frameworks.
Right, like PHP,
Node.js, Go has some, C++, Java.
And now .NET's there.
Yep, we're number 7 now in the latest results. So yeah. that's pretty cool.
Yeah. You get paid by like how many you go up each time.
That's so how I act. So
yeah,
like,
yeah.
I'm trying to get to 1.
But if it goes down, you have to pay us, right?
Yes. Okay. That's how it works.
Okay.
Yeah. So we did a bunch of work in Kestrel, our web server, in ASP.NET Core, in 2.0 and 2.1 to increase the perf. And out of that work came this library that is at the heart of Kestrel. It ended up being called a pipelines because the name channels was taken already. So we had a lot of interesting names. Pipelines was the one that came out of it. And it's a library to do high performance networking in an easy way in .NET.
Okay, how about we go to the next slide? Because I think it pretty much says right that.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, so what we saw was in .NET, it was easy to write code that was idiomatic but slow. So if you were reading from a network, reading from file streams, it would be really easy to write that code, but then if you measure the performance, it would be bad. To make it good, you have to add buffer pooling and management, and it suddenly got super hard and error prone. So the goal was, could we make the default knife implementation fast? And we spent a bunch of time making the code in Kestrel, both like performant and easy to write. For maintenance reasons, and we ended up with this beautiful graph you can show.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this graph basically compares the two apps that do the same thing. They read full lines separated by return from the network stream or from network and don't print them on the screen because printing them on the screen is slow. So we just simulate work that is pretty often done in different kind of servers where you have to read some data from network and then find a separator and then parse it. This is basically all Kestrel does, like finds new lines and then splits everything by spaces.
Is that what we get paid for?
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
You just shuffle text around.
I see.
In like very basic implementation, pipe, you can see pipe implementation scales much better with the increased load than socket is.
Right. So what I see is, as you go to the larger message sizes, you get to about 3x. If I
kind it's of 2x. It's more like 2x.
Okay, 2x. I was always really bad at math. Okay, 2x.
Yeah.
And like just quickly, the first part of the graph is like that because at that point it doesn't matter how fast you are processing things, you're just not writing things via network fast enough to get enough work in on the server.
Right. So, but I think the takeaway, though, isn't so much that pipelines was 2x streams. It was that to even get as good as, that's right. It's to get this performance, you basically didn't have to know a lot. Basically,
right.
Go read a docs.microsoft.com, you know, document,
yep.
You know, follow this pattern, and you're good to go. Whereas
that's
with
correct.
The streams, to get to that level or even higher, you would have to basically go to a 400-level Talkit build,
correct.
Get a manual that was this thick,
yep.
And then you should be good from
that's
there
right.
on in.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's jump in and like try to write a fast implementation of what we talked about, fast implementation of reading lines separated by return from the network stream. So this is the
right. So this is the stream-based model.
Yep.
This is we're
kind of
doing a
yeah.
comparison, right? Okay.
Yep. So we start with streams. So this is the first, like the simplest thing you would write when you see a stream. You read some data into a buffer and then you process line with this data. But there is a bunch of problems with this approach. First, this is a very a frequent mistake. People forget that read async returns how much data it read. So it could have read one byte, and you are trying to process like 1K of data. And then the other common mistake, and it's pretty hard for beginners, is that what do you do when a single redirection call didn't give you the entire data you were expecting? So you have to write a loop. So it gets harder there. And what if multiple pieces of data comes into the into a single redirection call? Like that's hard too. So let's improve our sample a bit and try to observe what redirection returned and try to parse every line that is in the buffer.
Right. So this reminds me of, you know, so there are all these APIs in .NET Framework. And I always go for like file stream because that's the one that has read line on it.
Yep.
Because it's like, oh my god, if you use the underlying ones, you have to use these
stream reader.
Yeah, stream reader, these like hard to use APIs where you have to like pass buffers.
Yep.
It's like, oh okay. I literally cannot do that.
It's simpler, right?
Yeah. Idiomatic reading loop using streams is not very easy to get right.
For the most part, people assume that things fit. And they're like, well, it mostly works in my testing locally.
Yeah.
And then you deploy it, and then in this one edge case, the network sends the data, and then like things blow up.
Yeah, and it's also very different locally because everything's fast. You send data, you get all
chunks.
Of it together, everything fits into a buffer. When you move to production, everything is slow, clients are slow, networks are lagging, and things start breaking. So in this sample, what we did is we looked at what redirection returned. We tried to find delimiter, and then we tried to find. We tried to process line by line, looking at delimiters.
Looking at the code, you can tell there's like a bunch of off by one errors somewhere in here.
I
don't know where, but there's a plus one somewhere here missing. So it's error prone to those kinds of bugs, right? Where you're parsing, you're keeping track of bytes read and bytes consumed, and you subtract to get the remainder, and then you add something else, and you kind of aren't sure anymore that the code is all working, right?
Yeah.
And this code looks better, but it doesn't work.
You need a million test cases
exactly.
to validate that.
Yeah. So it only handles up to a kilobyte of data. It is allocating too much data. So to make this work, you want to resize the buffer as more bytes come in. Past your limit. And there's a new type in .NET Core, I think 1.1 maybe, that we have just added called array pool.
That's right.
There's a built-in pool of buffers that was made to help the situations in the first place. So we add more code to our sample, and it tries to basically rent from the pool and resize, double the input size whenever you hit the limit. And it looks great, but it's still broken. There's tons of copying. Memory is never reduced, so you double the size as you read more data. But guess what? The next round, you're left with like a wonky buffer because you never shrunk that buffer as you like consumed data that was in it.
I see. Are you trying to say that when you get to the next line, you're left with the buffer at the size that it was for the previous line?
Correct. So imagine you got like 1K, 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 1 gig, 1K.
Yeah.
The next 1K will be a gig of buffer you're storing, unless you like write code to compact your memory.
Right.
Which you wouldn't do because like that never happens, right?
Yeah. But that's no way to run a server.
Exactly. So instead, you're super smart and you don't allocate a giant buffer, you allocate a list of buffers.
Yeah. How does that work with Docker limits?
Huh? Oh, man. So then you add more code to instead, because you're super clever, you now added a list of buffers instead of one buffer. But now everything as a result got more complicated. You have to now handle like n buffers instead of one buffer. Things suddenly get super tricky with like errors and returning. So we added code to, you know, add to a list if you have enough in that buffer. Otherwise, create a new one, add to a list, keep going, and then to return buffers to the pool whenever you're done with them. Super tricky at that point. And then you're supposed to throw it all of your code and then start over. And this is a line scan. Based on a list of buffers instead of one buffer. So things go off the rails, and this doesn't even handle any error handling. It isn't thread safe. The reader can be overwhelmed, so you want to have like a max size sometimes from data from the client. So pipelines aims to solve these features in a very simple way. And this isn't.
So are you serious? So we saw like, I don't know, 100 lines of code.
Yeah.
on the previous kind of maximum size chart, are you telling me that these basically four lines of code?
No.
Okay.
I lied.
Okay. This. Okay.
So this is part of it.
That's kind of like the pretty picture.
Yeah.
Now this slide is reality.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Wow.
So the thing Pipes does, Pipes tries to do buffer management on your behalf. So in this example, there's two sides to a pipe. There's the writer and the reader. The writer's job is to take data from some other source, put it into a buffer, and the reader consumes that data. So in this sample, I'm showing a call to get memory, which says, give me some memory from the actual underlying data source, the pool or whatever. Pass to socket, the socket fills it in, and I call advance, which tells the buffer how much I consumed. And then flush makes the data that I just read available to the reader.
Yep.
That's kind of the core of this loop. And then for the read side, I read some data from the pipe. Notice I don't pass in a buffer. I get one back. And that's key. Unlike streams, buffers are actually handled by the pipe itself. You just say read data, and it gives you data. It buffers on your behalf.
I see. And then how is lifetime handled for those buffers?
Ah, perfect. So there's a call to read async. And when you haven't found the actual data or have found it, you call advance. And the advance too is the key here, the key difference between kind of pipelines and streams, where the pipelines buffers data on your behalf. So as you're reading data from the network, if you don't have what you're looking for, you say, okay, pipe, I saw 10 bytes, I need 15, I need 20, I need 30. And you call advance to say, okay, I read this much, I still need more. And the pipe will handle that data for you efficiently. It'll store it in a list, it'll buffer it for you, rotate it for you as you consume data. Where normally you would have to do that yourself.
Right, but when you say advance,
yeah.
Say you're holding some data already in one of
yep.
these with one of these buffers, does that buffer get kind of, does the lease expire on that buffer and it goes back to the pool, or you can still hold on to this?
No, so when you call advance, you're giving control back to the pipe. So you no longer own it.
Yes.
Yeah,
so the lease expired, basically.
Correct. Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so you give that one back. And you, so advance, it must return a new buffer to you.
No, so read returns buffers, and advance says, I have already consumed this much. So you give advance a pointer to where you've consumed up to.
Oh, I see.
So let's say you have 4K and you consume 1K. You say, advance, I read 1K. If there's more data to be had, like give me data from 1K on to the rest of the 4K.
I see. So your lease only expired on the first 1K.
Yeah.
In that example.
Yep.
Got it.
But you still shouldn't use any data after you called advance.
Yeah,
just ask pipe, call read async again, and it will give you data back again. Don't put it into a field and use it later, because when you call advance, pipe is in control again until
so
you call read async
right,
again.
So you drop basically the variable,
the reference
correct. That you had access to.
Yep.
And then read will do the right thing.
Yeah. At a super high level, think of it as like a rent return from a buffer pool. And it kind of hides those semantics behind read and advance, where you need to tell it when you're done so it can handle that for you. So if you consume the data, it'll say, okay, you've consumed it, I'll return to the pool under the covers.
Right, so you basically, this goes back to the naive implementation again, which is you just basically call these two APIs, at least in this particular example.
Correct.
And you just use whatever read gives you, and
yep.
every time you call advance, you discard
it's
every,
yep.
you, it's done, and then you go
call
back
read
to
again.
Read again.
Correct. Total. All right, so demo.
Sense. Awesome.
Yeah, so for the demo, we have the server app that we discussed that reads lines from network and prints them on the screen.
So you have a client and a server using pipelines.
Yeah, on the screen I have a client and the server.
And these are both ASP.NET apps, or they're just console apps?
They're both console apps.
Okay.
You don't have to use ASP.NET to use pipelines.
Oh, interesting.
Okay, so how does it, is there some code in the one that says listening on that basically says, like, please go look at this port to see if there's something there? Or maybe you should do the demo first.
Yeah.
And then
so what the client does is for every key press, it sends this key press to the server. And when server detects a new line, it prints it on the screen. And to answer your question, we just use a socket class and socket receive async method to receive data from the network.
But how does it handle, like, for example, say you started the listener 5 minutes before you started the producer. How will it wait? Will it just wait in a loop until the producer?
Yeah. We wait for a client to arrive, and then we start the loop to read lines and write lines.
But even so, like, the read async wouldn't yield until data came into it. So the read async loop would just hang on read async until the socket booted up and we like called write.
Right. So I should think of it as like a read line or read key is on the console.
Yeah.
But so it'll wait until.
But without blocking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A non-blocking version of that. Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't block threads. It's evil.
Yeah.
Yeah. And let's look how we handle bytes when they arrive. So before we call receive async, we ask pipe for a block of memory to put data into when it arrives via network.
How much memory?
So the pipe decides on how much memory you get. There are some settings you can tweak before creating pipe, but then it's a conversation between how much pipe wants to get and how much pool that is backing our memory wants to give. Like, pool has max buffer size that they are allowed to give to pipe, and pipe negotiates in between how much customer wants, how much it wants to be efficient, and how much pool can give. And you'll get that, and you are
right.
Efficient.
So you could have specified.
Yeah,
you can
hint on a number, but you are not guaranteed to get it.
So as an example, in Kestrel, we don't want to actually use. So for example, say we had 4K. And we read down to like 1 byte remaining, we wouldn't want to use that buffer to keep reading data, because why do a 1 byte read? So we ask for a minimum of like 2K, so if you ever get below that 2K, we'll get a new buffer. So you can kind of play games with that and do performant things where you want to make sure you have at least this much data to read data from the actual like underlying source. So you don't thrash on like 1 byte things.
Because that makes no sense, right?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
But don't start with that.
Yeah.
Try it by default.
Do it
most
after
of the time,
measured.
That's enough.
Yeah.
Yeah, and after data arrives over network, we get amount of data read.
Yeah, I just got from that. Don't do what David Fowler does. Is that the lesson here?
The lesson is to always measure first.
Okay.
Yeah, measure first.
But trust me.
And we just notify pipe how much data was read into the buffer, because buffer is just a transparent like byte array, so it doesn't know what you wrote into it. And after we notified it, we call flush async. Flush async would make the data visible to the reader side. So until then, reader read async wouldn't return. But after we call flush async, we get onto the reader side. When the result of read async contains of multiple properties, but the one that we'll look at right now and the one that's most important is the buffer. And you can see it contains our single byte.
And it has segments.
And it has segments that we'll
cover later.
We'll cover later. So you take that buffer. There is a bunch of extension methods on it that you can use as alternatives to index of, and it has slice, so you can take a sub buffer and pass it around
without allocating.
For folks that don't know what slice is, that's a method on top of our span class, right? We keep on talking about span of t.
Yep.
This
isn't the span slice, but it is the equivalent of a span slice.
Oh,
where
on
you
a,
have
buffer.
A buffer.
On
yeah.
the on the
okay. You
sequence.
Have this buffer and you can slice it without allocating.
Got it.
A subsegment.
And in this example, we try to find position of return. And when we don't, we call advanced 2, saying that we looked at everything that we got and we want more, but we didn't consume anything. So next time when new data arrives, we want to get everything again. And when we'll go through a couple more key prices.
Too many breakpoints set.
Okay.
Yeah.
So when you finally.
And the buffer gets bigger every time.
Yeah, buffer. So
if you look at buffer, it now has 3 bytes instead of having 1 byte.
Yeah.
So normally you'd have this code in your own code. You'd call a read with a stream, you'd get some data back, and you'd have to buffer it yourself until the next read.
And unfortunately, it has to happen in every layer. Like if you wrap network stream into SSL stream into JSON reader into MVC, whatever, deserializer,
yeah.
This, I need more a bit more data and let me buffer it, happens on so many levels. And that's what pipe solves to.
Yeah. So you can't be sure who's buffering, so you just buffer just in case.
Right. So with the code as written, though, imagine you do have this 1 gigabyte line. Or is this buffer just going to keep on growing?
So good question.
Good question, yes. We don't grow the buffer. We append more buffers. So this read-only sequence structure that you get is backed by a linked list of buffers.
I see.
And that's why it has its own slice, because its slice would be multiple buffers. So you never, you don't have to grow buffers when you want to receive more data. And you can get it in one logical piece still and look at it as a one logical piece.
And there's two things to unpack from that thing. There's like memory bloat. Do you want to have 1 gig of one like giant array memory? And that would happen in the large object heap, which is bad. That won't happen. But you would still have a gig allocated. And we do have default settings in the box, so you don't, so you can't really over-allocate. So I think by default it's a couple K, which may be a bit small actually for some scenarios.
32 and 64.
32 K.
Yeah. So this
any more than that, it'll just tell you like, bro, change the settings to be higher.
Yeah. So this is probably a horrible analogy.
Yeah.
But so with, with CPU we brought async.
Yep.
So that was an A on synchrony.
Yep.
And then this feels like this is more about data. And it almost feels like it's A segment tree or something like that. That's the horrible.
Let's try. If you're going to coin that term.
Yeah, it's a very bad term. But it feels like, you know, it's basically breaking the data into segments without causing you as the developer to deal with that. Because
right.
That's kind of the same thing async did.
Yeah.
Is it still allows you to write synchronous code.
It is, yes.
And so this still allows you to build like unisegmentary code. And so you don't have to deal with the fact that it's all been broken apart.
Yeah.
Underneath
it's,
the scenes.
It's making streaming data easier to consume as like logical payloads.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Although streaming data, like, if you talk to the C# team about C# 8, they'll say that async for each is the new, like async enumerable is the new way, this is the new answer for streaming data. So do we get to cancel this project?
Oh, no.
Or like, how does this relate to their async data solution? Streaming data solution.
There's a world where you could potentially for each async over the data coming in on the reader side.
Yeah.
Where you would for each over the buffers coming in. The only weird part was that you'd have to call advance yourself at every stage in the loop. But we are playing with like ideas on how to make this be async enumerable compatible.
Yeah. Or on the producer side, could you do yield return into a pipeline?
That would be interesting. It would be buffers, but probably not out of the box, but there could be an adapter.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of the time you cannot for each data that's inside the pipe because you have to have enough before you decide what to do.
And I see.
Like if all data was like that you can just for each over it, we wouldn't have a pipe at all. Because then you don't need to worry about buffering. You just read into the same small buffer and you print it on the screen, right? If you want to print stream onto the screen, there are no problems like we described in this sample. You just read it and print it and it's gone. And that's where it's like not exactly fits together.
I see. Okay.
Yeah.
But we are thinking about ways to integrate
it
better.
Yeah.
Yeah. And now that you find return, you I skipped through process line. You call this method that unfortunately has to be aware that buffer is not a single segment to prevent us from allocating. You can always call buffer.toArray, but then you allocate an array. But advantage of having this that is that you can avoid it by just calling write on every segment.
So we have this first class type called read-only sequence that was in .NET, I think 2.1 that we had introduced. And the whole idea was that there's a type in the BCL that represents a multi-segment buffer list. And the goal is that we would have a bunch of APIs that take this in, by default, so you wouldn't have to unpack it yourself for every single thing. In .NET Core 3.0, we're adding this type called sequence reader that you pass you pass in a buffer like this to a sequence reader, and it gives you helpers for reading like ints and dates and those kinds of things in easy ways. So you don't have to write the code yourself to unpack the segments and do things yourself. Today it's a little bit tricky, but that type should help us have people write parsers more trivially for pipelines.
Right. Now, the read-only segment, I think you
sequence.
Call it? Sequence.
Yeah.
So is that a struct or is it a reference type?
It's a struct.
It's a struct.
Okay, right.
So we don't allocate.
Yeah, exactly. That's where I was headed. So as we for each through there, there's no allocations
correct.
That are occurring.
The only place where pipe allocates is when you ask for memory and read. Allocates is as in asks pull for more memory.
Okay.
After that, reading is completely free. So no matter how many times you
right. So from a kind of reliable software standpoint, once you ask for that memory, if you pass that kind of memory test in terms of having that much memory available, then you should just be golden from that point on and not have to worry about ooms or anything like that. Awesome.
So to geek out a little bit, if you have time left, some of the things that made us go with pipes are some things that became standard in .NET Core in general. So we had this idea that in .NET, you can write a custom awaiter. So if you want to have a thing be awaitable, you can make your own thing and have it be awaitable. And pipes started out being that way. But then we kind of convinced people to introduce a more generic way to have a single object that could be awaited multiple times without having to allocate for every single await. Because one of the key things we saw in the perf before was every single read async socket would allocate a task. That's unfortunate, right? What if you could just have the socket represent the actual like state of the read, and you, in a loop, read over and over and over, and you only allocate the socket, nothing else. So in .NET Core 2.1, pipelines has that behavior where you allocate once per object instead of once per operation. So does WebSockets, so does socket. So we kind of improve like the whole system by having the performance pushes that we kind of saw in pipelines as like being helpful. So value task now supports a backing I value task source, which pipelines implements to make the whole thing allocation free.
Yeah.
So that was like a huge deal.
Yeah, I remember reading some of the
the
back and forth on that topic. That was exciting. Yeah,
it was good. It was good.
Yeah. The other thing about pipes is we keep talking about network, but we call it async buffer management primitive, not networking primitive. So if you're reading from file and you still want to get the same benefits, you can. It's not tied to streams or network or anywhere or anything else.
Yeah.
It's just you put data in, you get data out. If you want to do it efficiently without allocating, and it's bytes, go for it.
And to the we're in 3.0, in ASP.NET Core 3.0, we're actually exposing pipes on the HTTP context in a first class way. So we'll have like request.body, and the body will be a pipe.
Oh.
So that's one big thing that we're like super excited about happening in 3.0. And the big idea is that we will be able to use the same buffers from the web server all the way through the middleware, all the way through the MVC. We don't have to copy. Right now we use different pools at different parts in the stack because that's Kestrel and it has its own pool, and this is like MVC and has its own pool.
Right.
We'll be using the same pool all the way through. So we're hoping it will be like a huge.
Right, so we finally built a platform that Netflix can use.
Yeah, of course.
Is that a fair analogy?
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Okay, so what would you like to leave us with? So what we kind of talk about is where do you go to get started?
Yep.
And if you kind of want to participate in this at a lower level, like are there any design conversations that are still going on for 3.0 that people can participate in.
Yeah, bring up, so the first thing, nuget.org, bring up nuget.org and show the...
Oh yeah,
there's a package.
We forgot to talk about that. So this is a package as opposed to being something that's part of .NET Core app.
Correct. So it's a package, it's .NET Standard 2.0. I think it's 2.0 minimum, I think. And it runs on .NET Framework, it runs on .NET Core Standard, so runs everywhere.
Yeah, so click on dependencies. That's what I always look at to, there we go. Okay, so
it's 1.3, there you go.
It runs on
4.6 and up. and upwards.
Okay, so you must get additional functionality in net standard 2.0 versus 1.3.
It's mostly perf optimization.
On net core app.
Not functionality.
On net core app, this thing is super optimized. And it will get more optimized on net core app, like 3 as we add more features.
Right.
The other ones are mostly just slower. They're the same feature set today.
Okay, and are there any good samples to look at?
Yeah, there's an amazing sample that I wrote. You should go look.
Okay.
which sample are you talking about?
Yeah, the one that you just butchered.
Oh.
Yeah. Right, and we
TCP Echo.
Right, and there's the blog post you wrote. We can link to that in the show notes.
Yep. Yeah. So there's a blog post by me, David Fell. Oh. David, man. You know my thing? You don't go in it all the time?
It's like, oh my gosh, I've like never worked with you before.
this sample that shows a TCP server and client using Pipeline.
Is that basically the same?
Yep.
Yeah, same sample. And then there's the blog post that we'll link to. And then there's Mark Gravel from Stack Overflow.
Oh, yes.
Who is like the biggest Pipelines fan ever. He actually rewrote Stack Exchange Redis 2.0. On Pipelines.
So did they ever finish their, and maybe this is a horrible thing to ask because maybe they didn't, but did they ever finish their migration? Weren't they doing like this big migration?
To core?
Well, but I thought it was to Pipelines in particular, and they had...
That happened.
And they were like, oh my God, now we're allocating like 10 terabytes of data where it was only like 1 kilobyte before.
They had a bug. They shipped though.
Okay.
Oh, no, so, okay, so there's two things. They ported Redis to Pipelines.
Okay.
And that's done, and it shipped, and we had like back and forth.
And it's
like,
all awesome.
It's all awesome. It's much faster. They erased an entire library that they had before to manage sockets. Now they just use the Pipelines, and it has all the things built into it. Yeah.
And now they basically have you guys as their developer.
exactly.
You're on their team now.
The memory thing is about they're porting Stack Overflow's WebSocket server to ASP.NET Core.
Okay.
And they saw their Gen Zeros were ginormous.
Oh,
and
that's the thing they were talking about recently. Correct. Okay, and we're still fixing that.
Yeah, that's still like a
thing.
A wow. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Good times.
Yep.
Okay, guys, thanks for coming on the show.
Awesome.
Pipeline sounds awesome.
It's awesome. You should use it.
Yeah.
For everything.
For everything. Okay. Well, today we learned about System.io pipelines from David and Pavel, and we hope you liked what you saw. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks.